Welcome to an Innovation Forum podcast with me, Toby Webb. Joining me again in this podcast is Alison Ward, CEO of Cotton Connect. Hello again, Alison.
Hello there.
So this is the third of a series of podcasts. We've talked about the general sort of cotton sustainability issues in the marketplace. We've talked a bit about China. In this podcast, Alison, I'd love to hear your views on farmers in particular, because you're doing a lot of work, not just with the brands at one end, but with the farmers at the other. Particularly in the developing markets, and they're pretty poor farmers, I think, economically speaking. How do you start even beginning to talk to them about sustainability in cotton sourcing and farming?
Yeah, really good question. I also think that farmers divide into different groups. So in India, you get what we would call mobilised farmers, so perhaps farmers that have already had some agricultural education. Perhaps they've worked, there's been an NGO or a local investor already worked with them in a little bit. And when we work with farmers that are perhaps one step up, we find that our education and information is like dynamite. So I met a farmer in Morbi in India, and he had a loan for some drip irrigation. And as he paid off his loan in a year, he extended his drip irrigation to his farm. He doubled his cotton yield, and he was off. You know, we gave him a small piece of help, and then he drove it himself and inspired his community. Whereas I also met some tribal farmers in India who really were completely unempowered, and they were so far away from being able to take information and take support, that actually it's a much slower process to get those farmers onto a program and seeing good results. So it's quite easy sometimes to see farmers as one group, but within it, I think they really split down into both farmer motivation, the type of land they have, and sort of their access to finance or access to other opportunities. So it's really tailoring our program a little bit depending on the farmers.
What's the commonalities between them? I mean, where do they respond the most? I mean, you and I, as we both remember, 4 years ago, were in West Africa in Ghana talking to cocoa farmers when you were working for Cadbury, and I was interviewing various farmers. And I remember you and your colleagues telling me at the time that a lot of what they wanted was about increasing yield, because they could get more money. So is it very simply about just getting more money in their pockets, or are they thinking a bit more about, you know, chemicals use and other areas?
Yeah. Really interesting. And what I found, especially in India, is that the idea of organic is actually part of a sort of a way of life and a way of thinking. So I've met some farmers, really inspirational farmers, who really feel that it's actually part of their religion, it's part of their life philosophy. So there is a sort of a group in India, which is quite inspiring, of farmers and farmer trainers that are seeing this as lifestyle choices for them. So I met some brothers who were doing lunar planting. So they were planting their cotton by the moon cycle, and felt that
so
was...
So biodynamic cotton.
Yeah. So really, and they were also spraying the cotton with buttermilk because that was a great pesticide. And they really had some really interesting ideas, I felt. But that was all part of their philosophy, their way of life, and treating nature well, and nature will treat you well.
So what about the scale of this? We mentioned it in other podcasts. You said something like 6% of cotton farmers around the world, presumably in the emerging markets rather than the US and Australia, are being reached in some way by sort of sustainable and ethical projects. What does that really mean? Does that mean that they are receiving technical support and financial support from a number of different organisations? You know, how do we get that 6% to 12% and beyond?
For me, the heart of this is about brand commitment and giving farmers that business commitment and trigger. So I think that we've got lots of sustainable fibre. It's, you know, the actual uptake into supply chains is quite low at the moment. So if you're a farmer or farmer group, you've done all this great work, you've had a benefit because your profits have gone up and you're using less chemicals and pesticides. But actually, that fibre isn't necessarily being bought as sustainable fibre. And we see it over and over again in commodities, that there's this sort of disconnect between we say that we want sustainable commodities, but when it comes to actually buying it, actually we're not really we're not actually procuring it. So for me, that's a big disconnect in the market at the moment.
Are the brands doing enough here? Because, I mean, one of the reasons we put on this conference we're holding in March about sustainable and ethical cotton sourcing, March 2015, listeners, do come along, have a look on the Innovation Forum website about that. One of the reasons we're putting this on is, I remember someone just telling me about a big brand that didn't really have a hedging strategy for cotton, yet they were buying a huge proportion of cotton comparative to what they sold as a clothing retailer. We then contacted that brand recently about the conference, and they said, oh, sorry, we have absolutely no budget, we can't come. And this is a huge, very profitable retail brand. So is there a need for some of these brands to think a bit more strategically about this? And how can we get them to do that? I mean, do you need a sort of campaigning NGO to come and help you kick some of them down the road a bit?
Very interesting. I've been on the end of campaigning NGOs, so it does raise attention in the boardroom, but I don't think it's a sustainable solution. What is important is the business case, because we have to show that sustainability makes sense for business. And I think that this is still the dynamic. You know, you at the moment you will pay more for sustainable fibres, but actually we should begin to embed that into a business cost and find ways of making the supply chain more efficient to cover those additional costs or spread the reward further down the supply chain. So I think for me there's still something at the heart of, you know, we have to make this work for business. And I think, you know, we know that consumers or people don't want to pay more for sustainable chocolate or sustainable cotton, or we know that it's only about 6-9% of the market will do that. So we still need to find this right business dynamic, and I think that's at the heart of the solution here.
And the brands who are supporting this, they're all ones thinking slightly longer term. I guess the challenge for a lot of the clothing brands is they're so unbelievably short term in their outlook. And when I look at the companies that support your work and those doing more in agricultural sustainability, they're all ones with long term plans. I guess what we need, and I'm just speculating here, is more retailers, as in the sort of fast fashion clothing companies and others, being encouraged to think more long-term about sustainability. They're not quite there yet, I think, a lot of them.
No, not at all. And I think that the interesting word that keeps cropping up for me is legacy. And I think there's some companies, that, especially family-owned businesses, where it's about their legacy. So they know that they're only holding their company for the next generation of the family, as opposed to the next generation of share owners. And I think it is quite a different view, because in a family business, you know that you're a custodian of that, as opposed to having to report to a share owner who really wants delivery on the numbers on maybe even a quarterly basis.
Yeah, it's the classic short-termism thing. But still, you know, there are other PLCs that have gone beyond this, you know, Unilever and many others who've, you know, said, if you don't like our approach, sell our shares. But I guess that's quite a brave thing for a lot of companies to do. A final question before we finish off, Alison. What does success look like for you? As chief executive of a company, social enterprise with, you know, 30, 35 people, you've got a global footprint, you're growing. How ambitious can you be, and what's success going to look like for you 2 or 3 years down the road?
So for us, of course, there's a financial success, but actually our mission is to create a shift in the market, to create change. And actually, one of my successes could be that we have successful programs that they embed into business, and then we don't work with that company anymore because they've embedded it into their business. Now, that potentially is a road going nowhere for us, but so we have to innovate, come up with new opportunities for the sector. But actually, this should be business as normal and not about a special sustainability investment.
Alison, thanks so much for your time. Listeners, thank you for listening. This is the third of three podcasts I've just recorded with Alison Ward, CEO of Cotton Connect. You can find the other two also on the Innovation Forum website. Thanks for listening.